Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another Wednesday night edition of Sports Conversation. We're along the Fighting Network. I'm Don Henderson, and we look forward to a great show tonight. We've got some great guests for us, a lot of things to talk about in a lot of different areas around the country and in different sports. So we'll get things underway. Roy Cummings is in Tampa, Florida. Roger Hendler is in Atlanta, Georgia. But we've got reporters in Washington, D.C., and also in Baltimore, Maryland. And we'll be talking soccer, a lot of important soccer games coming up. Two big events in New York City at Yankee Stadium and so forth. We'll get to that later on in the show. Baseball season started today, if you can believe it, in Korea. Anybody that got up to watch a game at 6 o'clock in the morning in Korea must be either a big better or nuts, one of the two. I don't know. I don't know which one. Anybody that cared about the Padres and the Dodgers at 6 o'clock in the morning had to be out of their minds. But anyway, the Dodgers won the game 5-2, scored 4 runs in the 8th inning. And Roy, we'll start off with baseball and talk a little bit about what's happening. Did you get up at 6 to see that game?
Well, Don, I'm not a bettor,
So I guess I'm nuts because, yes, I was up at 6 o'clock. Now, look, I was up at 6 o'clock for another reason, but believe me, as soon as I did get up, I turned on the game, was in the third inning, and I put it on while I was doing what I was doing and paid attention to it until the end and enjoyed it thoroughly. And I'm already looking forward to tomorrow's game. So count me among those who was more than eager to see the start of the baseball season.
I'll tell you, Tony Kornheiser had the best answer of all. He got up this morning to watch the game, too, and he turned it on, and he couldn't find what channel it was on. If you watched their show earlier tonight, and he went back, took the dog out, fed the dog, walked around, came back, said, well, let me try our network, ESPN. And he said, oh, here, I didn't even know the game was on our station.
Poor communications, my man.
You got that. Roger, did you get up at 6 to watch it?
Well, I was up before 6, but I can tell you I wasn't watching any baseball game, okay, getting ready to go to school.
Well, the one thing about the game, the Padres are starting off with a lot of anticipation during the off season, a lot of moves that they made, some that they didn't make that they thought they would. And Roy, as they go into the season, we're going to challenge the Dodgers. We're going to challenge the Dodgers. And they do exactly what they do every time they say that. Gave up 4 runs in the eighth inning and lost it 5-2. So they're starting the season right on target.
Yeah. But an odd twist in this one. You know, I don't know what happened. Maybe there was a joke by somebody saying that maybe the gloves got somehow ruined through pressurization in the cabin and the long trip over to Korea. But, you know, a ball through the webbing of the first baseman's glove, Jake Cronenworth, is what allowed that 4-run inning to happen, really. And kind of a tough, you know, a tough loss, really, for the Padres. They got a good start, a fairly decent start, I should say, out of Yu Darvish, and it was a good game. Look, the thing I was actually most interested in watching, it's not why I got up to watch it, but the thing that really struck me about the game was the number of young people in the stands in Korea watching this game. You know, you look at the demographics of a baseball game in America, and I would say it's, you know, probably 35 and older at least, right? And I saw just oodles, and I mean, far the majority of the fans in this game seem to be young people in their teens and 20s. And it just says, I think, that, baseball is clearly a sport that has captivated the youth in Korea and maybe over in Japan as well. Obviously a lot of interest in seeing Ha-Sung Kim from the Padres play, a lot of interest in seeing Shohei Ohtani, obviously, Yu Darvish as well, all the players from the Pacific Rim. So I thought it was a great display for Major League Baseball, the tremendous atmosphere, really a fun atmosphere, and a good game, really. As I said, an oddity that decides it more or less. But for the most part, a well-played game and a good game. So, Major League Baseball is off to a good start. We'll see what happens tomorrow.
Well, Roy and Roger as well, Ohtani has been the focal point, obviously, since getting in Korea. And all they're talking about is that, you know, the differentials between Korea and Japan and how they've been separated for such a long period of time, and that all these young Korean, you're talking about wearing Ohtani shirts, what he's been, what he's meant to baseball going over to Korea. He's captivated what's happening over there. And really the public relations standpoint of it has been better than they ever even anticipated. Roger?
Well, yeah, I would agree with that. When you start getting more players from, Southeast Asia, I think you're really going to get a bigger draw. But I'll tell you, Roy, I was to a number of Phillies games last year, and I will tell you, I think the the demise of the sport for the young is a little overstated, because what I saw were a lot of college students and nice couples with a lot of kids in their younger kids, and they were in their 20s and 30s. And I mean, it was predominant. I mean, you know, you're going to get, some people in their 50s and 60s and 40s. But I just think that the demise is a little premature.
You know, I won't disagree with that. And again, I probably see a lot of games here in St. Petersburg, obviously, where, you know, the majority
sure.
of the people are 65 and older. But no, you're right. But I just I like the atmosphere. And to kind of, expound on that just a little bit, it was one day middle of last week, right after that and Kate Middleton Photoshopped photo controversy struck, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I saw something on TV about the most Googled people or topics over the course of a week after that happened, and Kate Middleton was number one, but baseball was number two, and no other sport was in the top 10. So now, granted, we were going into a weekend, maybe a lot of fantasy baseball leagues were getting started, so maybe that had something to do with it. But I think that's a good sign. Look, I'm from an era where baseball was, was king, and
mm-hmm.
and it was the national sport. Clearly, football has overtaken it in terms of ratings. And look, there's no question why. Every football game, there's one a week. Now there might be, granted, there's one almost every night now, but there's only one a week for your team, and it's an event. An NFL game is an event. Whereas baseball's played every day, and if you didn't see today's game, well, there's always one tomorrow, and but I do think that right now baseball is in a really good spot, because look, there's never been a player like Shohei Ohtani. The closest anyone can even think is Babe Ruth, and Babe Ruth never pitched to the as often as Shohei Ohtani has. And you know what? There's stars everywhere. Every team has several stars, really, if you follow the game closely. And the game is played at a high level. It's more exciting than ever with some of the rules changes. So, as I said, I think baseball's in a good place. And it was, again, it was for me, it was great to have the game back today.
Well, no question that, they've done so much with spring training and a lot more coverage of baseball than there ever was in our time growing up. You saw maybe one or two games during spring training, and you read about it. Most of it you read it in the paper. You didn't really get a chance to see very many games. But now that's not the case at all. You get to see 2, 3, 4 games a day, depending on what time you're available to watch. A couple other things about baseball, too. Roger, we did have a signing with the Giants, one of the two pitchers that was top shelf, and everybody's saying, where was he going to go? Where was he going to go? Well, he took a 2-year contract that he can buy out at the end of the first year if he chooses to do so, but got a pretty good contract, $50 million, a couple of years. I don't think that's too bad.
No, it's not, and, there were a number of teams that were after Sal, but I think the Giants made a good move, and I think he made a good move, and we're seeing this more and more where players are taking a 1-year deal or a 2-year deal with an opt-out after one. Matter of fact, there was in the NFL with the Eagles, there was one of those with a pretty good ball player, the defensive back. And, I think it's smart. I mean, the only thing is they're taking a chance that if they get hurt in that first year, they're only guaranteed the second year. So where I know a lot of times they'd have much rather have, as we all would, a longer-term contract.
Well, the pitchers at 31 and 32 years of age aren't just going to get those long-term contracts, I don't believe, any longer. I think they're going to get, one, two, maybe three, but with buyouts in all three categories. And Bochy, of course, talking out in Texas, winning the World Series last year. And, you know, a big part of his World Series win is the player that's still out there and has not been signed. Roy, he's still sitting on the sidelines. Bochy and Texas say they want him very much, but there are also a couple other teams talking, but nobody's signing.
Yeah, and I would say Texas needs him as well. Jordan Montgomery we're talking about, obviously. I think Texas needs him because you look at their rotation right now and, you know, you're still missing a couple of guys that that they were counting on. And, you know, so I think they need him. I'm a little surprised they haven't signed him yet. You know, maybe there's not a rush because at this point, even as it was with Blake Snell, who I think is going to probably be back about the third time through the rotation, maybe the fourth. But he's stretched out to 60 pitches now, which is, you know, pretty good. You know, so it may not be that long before Blake Snell, you know, can pitch for the Giants. But with Jordan Montgomery, it might be a little bit longer. It's a little bit older arm. And so maybe there's not a great rush. Maybe the conversation is, well, get yourself stretched out to 70 pitches and then we'll talk, you know, and see where we're at. So let's see what happens. And the other thing is, guys, I'm really surprised that a team like the Yankees, which is hurting now for starting pitching. I mean,
really hurting. Really hurting.
Yeah, Gerrit Cole's going to miss time. So you know, yeah, they're hurting as well. So again, that's another team that I'm surprised that it took this long for guys like Blake Snell to sign. Very surprised that he signed with the Giants. I guess that's the Giants suggesting that, hey, we can be a contender, if not this year, then maybe next year. And maybe there's some way to, you know, an incentive or two to keep Blake Snell around next year because he does have that option out. But just a little surprised at that because, I think you look at the Giants, you say, okay, well, you know, probably a third-place team in that division at best, right? But maybe they think that there's a wild card for them. And that may not be a bad way to go for them. You know, they can get that second wild card. So we'll see. But, yeah, there's still some players out there. You know, J.D. Martinez is still out there, too, a hitter who, you know, he's a pure designated hitter. But, look, a lot of teams can use a bat like that. So we'll see where it goes. But, you know, and again, don't forget, even though the season started today in Korea, we got another week to go. So week and a day. So it doesn't start until next Thursday. So we'll see where it all ends up then.
Well, there was a lot of conversation today when they talked about not only that Montgomery still out there and the fact that he was such a big factor in winning the World Series for Texas. He was really came in and of course, he was a former Yankee as well, so they know him well. So your point is well taken, Roy. You would think the Yankees, you know, they know him. They know his personality. They know he fits in the clubhouse. And they are desperately in need right now of some veteran-type pitching. So you're right on target there. Roger, before we go to another, there's so many other topics to talk about, but before we go to another one, is there some other baseball news that you want to throw in there? A local team in Atlanta, they won again today. Phillies, anything in Philadelphia that you'd like to touch on?
Well, I think that, you know, it, like Roy, you said, it's another week away, and I think there'll still be some moves made. You know, I think the Braves are solid, throughout their roster, to be honest with you. And I was surprised that a couple of the Phillies that were sent down, Mick Abel, but he, you know, he may be back anytime soon. It might be short term, depending on whether a pitcher goes down. But I was hoping that that he would stay. But you know, just like Roy, you're 100% right. We got a week to go. Anything can happen. I saw that Aaron Judge is injured. I don't know if he's coming back next week or not. But
supposed to. He's in the cage with a bat. He is swinging. It's a rib injury, and you're right, Roger. He's, from all accounts, he's going to try to be ready next week.
Yeah, that's what I had heard this afternoon. So, and I think that's a big important part of the Yankees' success, obviously.
Well, you talk about shooting yourself in the foot. We've got March Madness going on right now, the biggest event in college basketball, one of the, other than the Super Bowl, maybe the biggest event on television. What does the NCAA do? They allow the portal to be started today. And as of this morning, better than 250. They've got two, in the New York Post, they've got 275. Between 275 and 250, players have already moved from the portal. Now, what does this mean? Well, it means that it almost annihilates the NIT, because a lot of teams, including St. John's, which didn't make the tournament, are not going. So, of course, all the writers around the country are all over the NCAA. How in the world could you allow the portal to be drawn the day that the NCAA tournament, their major event, is being played? Roy, any comment?
Yeah. Someone, it seems, is asleep at the wheel at the NCAA, because, look, you know, we've talked about this before, and it just seems to me that the portal's got to be something. There's got to be a period. In fact, there is. There's a period when, you know, there's nothing going on after the tournaments are over and everything else, when you can let these guys, you know, go through, and maybe they're, you know, and it just, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, as you said, they're ruining their own game,
right?
By this, because look, you've, in football now, you know, you've got kids opting out of bowl games, and this may not matter anymore as we get into the bigger, you know, 12-team tournaments for college football. It may not matter that much anymore. Maybe the players will stay and play. I'm sure they will. But for the last few years now, we've had that, and that's hurt the game. That's hurt college football. Now you've got this, and it's hurting college basketball, because, look, the NIT is still an important tournament. And, you know, what you're going to end up seeing at some point is you're going to see somebody opt out of a team that's in the NCAA tournament. And, you know, it could be a player, maybe a seventh or eighth player on the bench, but someone that a team has to turn to, you know, in the midst of a tournament run because of an injury or something. And it's just, to me, it's so simple to set a date in April for this to mid-April to start this transfer process, because what's the rush? You're not going to play until next season now, you know, with the new team. So why put anything out there that hurts your current team? Just because you need, you know, you feel that you want a better spot. And I'm all in favor of the portal. I think it's a great thing, but the timing is bad. It's really bad. And it just amazes me that the NCAA, you know, didn't think this one through.
Well, there's a number of things they don't think through, and I agree with you 100%.
Right.
They certainly didn't think this one through, because here you are, you're starting, I watched last night's game, and because my grandson happened to go to the school, so I watched it at the beginning of the tournament, and Wagner snuck one out, won it by 3 points in game number one. But the second big story now is today, what happened with Virginia? Now, Virginia was selected to be in the NCAA tournament. They did not have a good season during the regular season within the ACC. And they were selected, and they were beaten by an ungodly number of points, and were really never in the game. In the first half, they were down by 20-plus and never really did anything. And people were saying, well, what is this selection committee doing? Where do you get three teams from the Big East, and you got this team from Virginia in the ACC who can't even compete with Colorado? Roger?
Well, there's no doubt about it. I mean, Christopher Russo was all over this.
Everybody
about
St.
John's, St. John's not getting in. But just to follow up on the portal for a second, it's into high schools. I mean, we knew where parents moved, so I saw it years ago in Flowery Branch. People moved because Lee Shaw was a great quarterback coach, and had two sons that were terrific quarterbacks. But I asked when I was at high school last week about this player that I've had a number of times, and he's a senior, and I asked him, does anybody know him? And, oh, yeah, Yeah, he transferred to North Gwinnett to play football. Now he's back so he can graduate with his class. So here you go. You know, we've talked about, is it going to get to the high school level? And in some ways, it's already there.
Well, Roy, you were right on target because, you know, so many of the teams right now, and as they were pointing out, if they don't change this, which everybody thinks they're going to as soon as the season is over, they don't have, so many players have already said they're not going to play that you may not even be able to participate in the NCAA tournament. If you have three or four players, especially if they're two or three key players, and they say they're going to make a move, go someplace else, excuse me, you're stuck.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, the good news is, look, every team's got, I wouldn't call it a taxi squad, but, I mean, more or less, you know, you've got a fresh, you know, three or four freshmen, a couple of sophomores that can't make the team, you know, and you can suit those guys up, I suppose. But we're going to see, you know, if, as you said, I'm sure this is going to change, and it's going to change before we get to the next NCAA tournament. It should change right now. They should just put it on hold and say, look, nobody can go to the, we're changing the date of the transfer portal.
Exactly.
I don't think anybody's hurt by that. But if they don't, yeah, we could see a team, you know, suffer as a result of this. You know, who knows? Maybe we've already seen the result of it with the Virginia game, because Virginia looked like a team full of guys who were ready to bolt through the portal to another place. After a bad season, they want to get the heck out of there. And that's how they played last night. So, again, and you know, it's not just St. John's that can gripe about this. You know, here in Tampa, University of South Florida had a Cinderella season throughout the course of the regular season. Season like they've never had before. They were ranked 24th in the nation at one point, and they didn't get in. And because they lost in the semifinals of their conference tournament in a weak conference, the AAC, which is understandable, but the AAC did send two teams. You know, Florida Atlantic is in, UAB is in. And, you know, it's unfortunate, you know, that to see a team like Virginia non-competitive in an NCAA play-in game not get a shot, you know, for USF to not get a shot, for St. John's to not get a shot. I mean, there's at least a dozen teams that, you know, you could have put in there, and I'm sure they would have given you a better game than that. So, again, it makes you wonder, I mean, what kind of favor is being repaid here when a team like Virginia gets in after a bad season to begin with, and then they put on a performance like that. It's just, it's not good for the sport.
Well, last night on this, because we're gonna switch topics to hockey in just a second, but the Peacocks, who were the biggest surprise 2 years ago, when they have a high school gym. They don't have any real transfer, and yet they went to the quarterfinals of the NCAA tournament, one of the shocks of all time in the NCAA tournament. And, of course, they got to end their first games tomorrow, so we'll see how they make out this time around. But to get in 2 out of 3 years with, you know, such a small school with almost no enrollment, with no financing, with almost no anything, and they made it into the tournament. Roy, once again, thank you very much for the first half hour, as always, and we're going to have a chance to talk a little bit of hockey right now with an old friend of yours, because the Hall of Famer over there, Rick, is ready to go, and we're ready to have him on with us. So, Rick, if you're all set, we'll talk a little bit about hockey. We'll talk about the Lightning. We'll talk about the National Hockey League, and we'll talk about hockey in general. Are you with us?
I certainly am, and I'm ready to go, and I wish my best to my good friend Roy.
Well, he's still there, I think, to say hello to you.
There you go.
Yeah,
we got him
fortunate
both
to have
together.
Another Hall
two
of
legends.
Famer on the a legend indeed.
We two legends.
Miss him on the broadcast, that's for sure, here in Tampa.
There you go.
Well, Roy,
there you are.
Good to speak with you.
Becker and Cummings. All right. Let's start with, rather than go right to the Lightning, let's sort of generalize a little bit to start off with, Rick, and chat a little about, first of all, the Eastern Conference, because the four teams, all of a sudden Boston went right back up there. I think they're either two points, in first place now. But they've been going back and forth, which is a little bit of a surprise. They've got a a great team, the Bruins, so far. But your overall view, first of all, of the Eastern Conference.
Well, I think that I was just thinking about the Bruins. They are, you know, on the precipice of another 100 points, certainly not
right.
going to be setting any records like last year. But they're a team that obviously Patrice Bergeron, David Krejci down the middle, they were very strong last year in their final years playing in the NHL. And now, you know, it wasn't a case of these were good players who got traded and replaced by other players. They just lost them. So I really wonder how strong Boston's going to be. Of course, you know, they rolled into the playoffs, had that 3-1 series lead over the Panthers and found a way to lose it. I really wonder how strong they're going to be. I think the Panthers, although it pains me to say it because being affiliated with the Lightning for so long, I think they're the strongest team going in the Eastern Conference. So them, I like the Rangers in terms of their strength. I think Carolina's got the potential to be one of the very strong teams in the Eastern Conference. They're very solid, but they've made a couple of important additions at the trade deadline, and we really haven't seen the full effect of that and how they incorporate Jake Guentzel and, you know, others into their lineup. So we'll have to wait and see on that. But I like the Lightning's situation where they are right now. They're getting some rest with the schedule, which is going to be beneficial. And, you know, they pulled out a big win last night against Vegas. Obviously a game they really needed to start this trip in South Florida. So they're showing signs that they're getting very serious about this playoff race, and they're looking pretty good right now.
Hall of Famer Rick Peckham, our guest this half hour. And, of course, Rick, let's jump down to Atlanta, Georgia. Roger, you're up.
Okay, Rick, looking at the standards, by the way, always great to talk and hear from you, believe me. The Lightning have 80 points. The Flyers have 78. And the Lightning are, you know, in the wild card. And do you think that they need to change the structure for the playoffs as far as who qualifies as far as the points go?
I don't think so, Roger. I think it's, you know, this is kind of a unusual situation. I don't think you get this every year. And who knows, maybe Philly ends up with more points than the Lightning anyway. But it's very close, as you point out. The Lightning 2 points ahead in the game in hand. But I don't think so. I think it's a good system. I kind of like the way the playoff system is set up right now.
Rangers come up a little bit short because of a couple of injuries. Looks like Lindgren, they get a little bit lucky there. They're saying, even though they always say lower body injury, when he went in against the Islanders on Sunday night, I don't know if people got a chance to see it Sunday night, but he got hit pretty good into the boards on Sunday night, and it looked like it was going to be a lot more than 2 weeks, but they're saying now that it's a let's put it this way, around 2 weeks. I don't give you any definite times, around 2 weeks. So Rusevic has come in, and he's played very, very well for him. He sort of fit in at a time when they've got a couple of injuries and they needed a little help.
Yeah, I think he had some speed. He certainly got some experience. And I think it's going to be interesting to see him play with better players. You know, he's been in Columbus, and their roster really has not been at a real strong level for a number of years now. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how he plays. He's going to get some time with Zibanejad and some of the other guys who really are skilled in that lineup. And he's got some natural ability that could, you know, come out that we haven't seen yet in his time in Columbus. So, you know, I think the Rangers will be in pretty good shape. I think they get Trouba back before Lindgren. You're talking about Lindgren and his injury, and that's a big loss if he's out for any length of time. It'll be interesting to see them down the stretch against Carolina in terms of trying to get that number one seed for the Metropolitan Division. I don't think either one of them is going to catch Boston or Florida, you know, for the overall in terms of the conference.
One last note on him is the fact that he needed this plateau too, because at the end of the year he's in a situation where he's a free agent, and so yep. he wants to show a little bit with the Rangers in this last 17 games to prove that you know, his worth is what he thinks it's worth.
Yeah, he certainly got the motivation for that, and the motivation of coming to a winning team with high expectations and the biggest media market in the league. So I think there's a lot for Roslovic to play for, and I think the Rangers really benefit from that. So, as I say, they've got a real good lineup of forwards. He jumps in there along with Wennberg, and it's going to give him a little different look and some depth, which, as we know, watching the Lightning firsthand through their championship runs, three straight finals, you need that depth to get there. And, the Rangers have certainly added that as well.
Roger?
Yeah, you always need a hot goalie, Rick. There is no doubt about it. And a lot of things happen this year in the NFL, or the NHL, I should say, with goalies. Like, for instance, Carter Hart having a lawsuit against him from, I guess it was the World Games, 5 years ago? Something like that, and so he'll probably never play another game for the Flyers, and it just shows you how quick things can change when you get some circumstances that you didn't expect.
Yeah, you definitely in the playoffs need that goaltender, and it's interesting. I think it's a credit to the Flyers how well they've weathered just losing Carter Hart. I think that on the inside, they probably had a pretty good idea that they were not going to have him at some point for the rest of the season as the case moved ahead. And I'm sure they were getting information that the players that were involved in that scandal back in 2018 in the World Championships were really going to be in trouble. And they were, their seasons at least were going to end. But still, to have that happen, and still maintain like they have. They bounced back to some extent. They had the bad loss to the Lightning here, 7-0, but they bounced back a little bit, and Samuel Ersson has really, in the eyes of a lot of people, come out of nowhere to play very solid for them in goal. A lot of the Flyers people say, yeah, we've seen his capability in him maybe down the line, but here he is thrust in there, and he's done a great job with him. And they've kind of, retooled in a sense on the fly. The veterans on that team are generally very young veterans. And, full credit to, Keith Jones and Daniel Briere, John Tortorella, in terms of getting these guys on the right path to continuing and winning now, not just, hey, we're playing for the future, we're making trades for the future. It isn't that case at all. And here they are, as, you guys pointed out, 2 points behind the Lightning in terms of their season so far this season.
Also, the fact that you talked about Tortorella momentarily, and Tort got himself into a little bit of hot water. He wouldn't leave the bench. He got double penalties, and so it was a little costly for the Flyers there for a couple of days because he was not too happy about being thrown out of the game.
Yeah, I was at the game, and of course, in Tampa, they had the Tampa Bay Lightning Hall of Fame ceremonies, basically honoring the 2004 championship team, and this the 20th anniversary season since that first Lightning Stanley Cup. And most of the guys on that team were in town, and many stayed for the game. And I remember on TV, they showed the suite where the guys were watching the game from, and they're looking at the monitor at the replay of what's going on with Torts and the referee. And they're all kind of chuckling and laughing and smirking. I mean, they've seen that before, but I can see where Torts is coming from there. He's trying to spark his team. Nothing went right. All of a sudden they're down 4-0 early in that game. They get a couple of penalties and maybe something that he could chew on with the referee, and one thing led to another, and he just decided he wasn't going to leave, but ultimately he had to, and it was a pretty entertaining night.
Rick Wagamore, guest, Hall of Famer, and we're talking hockey, obviously. Go ahead, Roger.
Well, I'll tell you, Rick, a lot of discussion here in the Atlanta area about the NHL coming back to the area, not in Atlanta, but into Forsyth County, which is up where I live. And they're going to build this new complex on the south side of the county. And it's going to be patterned after what the Braves have done over in Smyrna with what they call the Battery. And what's included is I think it's an 18,500 or 19,000 arena that they want to have the hockey team in there. And and I was at a meeting, and the chairman of the commissioners had been in New York to talked to Gary Bettman, and I asked him if Gary Bettman brought up about how much the NHL got because of that sale and move to Winnipeg that went into the league coffers. Because, I was at opening night for the Flames, opening night for the Thrashers, opening night for the Flyers back then. But I think that hockey will survive if it comes back here, but not in downtown Atlanta. You know, it's not an inner city sport, but it is with a lot of people in the area. I know a woman and her husband that went to Bowling Green, and he played hockey, and that's just one of many people that I know that are big hockey fans in the area. So, have you heard anything, or do you know anything about it? Have you heard any scuttlebutt?
No, I haven't. To be honest with you, Roger, I'm not really, close with the NHL in general. But it's interesting when that story came out. Anson Carter is kind of front and center, the face of that effort. And he's a terrific guy. Had a nice career. Is doing a good job. Certainly with TNT on TV and other medias. But, it's interesting. You point out, the Flames were the original team in Atlanta before they moved to Calgary. It was before I came into the league, so I wasn't familiar with that initial Atlanta ownership. But I was in the league when the Thrashers came in and before they moved to the Winnipeg Jets. And it wasn't really a solid ownership situation,
right?
A committed ownership situation. And
exactly.
I think that's what really has to happen. I mean, if this new franchise has ownership that's as solid as the Braves have, well, there's no question it'll be a success, because the Braves are, just such a very solid organization. But, you say, well, okay, they're going to build this rink where the hockey fans are. It's not an inner city sport. We're going to build it out here, beyond Fulton County, and that's where the fans are. Well, that's what the Panthers did. You'll recall when the Florida Panthers came in, they played at Miami Arena, and we'd drive in there with the Lightning, and there were bars in every window, and, you were just told, get off the bus, get in the building as quick as possible. It was in a terrible neighborhood. So the owner at the time says, let's build our new arena out in Broward County. That's where our season ticket holders are. Well, we all know what a tough time they've had to sell tickets over the years with one, some of them were just, ill-informed owners to crazy owners to, just very ineffective ownership as a general rule all along. You need that ownership to be very good. As we've seen what has happened and the metamorphosis of the Lightning through terrible ownership come around, they've had a couple of good ones, Palace Sports for sure, and now Jeff Vinnick comes along and he's the epitome of a great owner. You have to have that to weather some slow growth maybe, to, do the right things in the community as Jeff has done and just grow the brand, and that's what it's going to take. So it'll be interesting to see if they come up with that kind of ownership. The NHL desperately, I think, wants to be in Atlanta and in that vicinity. But, you know, a lot's going to depend on that ownership making it work. Just building a building out there, as we've seen with the Panthers, is not a guarantee.
Maybe Roger knows better than I. I've seen the name of the person that is spearheading that and wants to actually build the franchise there and own the franchise there. And I think the epitome of what you're saying is Vegas. I mean, Vegas went from nothing, you know, a team that didn't exist. And look how competitive they've been every step of the way. Now, they're a little back right now this year. They're not in the top three, but they're still a very, very competitive team, and they have had tremendous results as far as fans are concerned.
Yeah, the ownership there, Bill Foley and his group, they've really done everything right from you know, just how they acquired their players and loopholes in the expansion draft that they took advantage of. You know, it was just a tremendous job in establishing that team, winning right off the bat the way they did. And,
right.
You know, as they, you know, final in year six, and Bill Foley had said, I want to win a Stanley Cup by year six, and lo and behold, they do. And, you know, I'm hoping they make the playoffs. I pull for that team because they have done so many things right. Key, you've got to get the right people in charge to be able to handle that responsibility.
Roger?
Well, you know, getting back to the Flames, Rick, the original group was Tom and I think his name, the brother was Bob Cousins. They were developers.
Okay.
And then Dillard Mumford, who owned the big chain of convenience stores, much different than the ones you and I are familiar with today, Wawa, QT. You know, these were like more convenience stores with gas there as a convenience, not a gas site with a big convenience store with it. And it was a different world. I mean, this is 50 years ago.
Yes.
And but they listen, I went to a lot of games, and they see what happened is they really brought the Hawks from St. Louis because they needed a new home for the Hawks, too, because they were playing at Alexander Memorial Coliseum, where I know Don has been to see, you know, college games against Tech. And then they built the Omni. And then, of course, the next to come was Phillips Arena. It's now the State Farm Arena. But I agree with you about Anson Carter. I met him at one of the there's a minor league team in Gwinnett County that I've been to a number of times, the Gladiators. And I met him there one night. He was just walking around, you know, and he had a gentleman with him, and we started talking. And I agree with you. He's a great spokesman for the NHL.
Yeah, and it's as you were talking about the Cousins brothers, it just reminded me, I mean, the NHL and the South, there was, I mean, let's face it, Phil Esposito introduced the National Hockey League to the South. And
right.
That happened with the Lightning in, you know, 1992. And Roy, if he were still on with us, could tell you all about all of that and how it came about in the 2 years or 3 years prior to that in terms of getting the spade work done and trying to make that happen. Yeah, the Flames in Atlanta in the, you know, early 1970s, like that had to be a very foreign concept to try to sell to people. And it's obviously a much, much different product. You know, it's a global sport and people enjoy it all over the country. And the Lightning, the Panthers with their success now, Carolina's won a Stanley Cup, Dallas has won a Stanley Cup. These southern markets have proven that they can be successful and people are going to respond, and the markets are very strong in terms of the fan support. So, and it's a different world than it was when the Thrashers were struggling, thrashing, if you will, you know, in the late 2000s before moving to Winnipeg.
Little pun there.
Sure.
Yeah. We're getting a little pun going.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. Well, you know, when you think about it, in 72, opening night in October 72 at the Omni, that was only 5 years after the Flyers started in 67, because
yep.
I know I was at opening night against the Pittsburgh, and Don, you were there too. That was a big night at the Spectrum.
Yep. No question about it. Rick, let's go to the Western Conference. So you touched a little briefly on it, but you take Winnipeg, Colorado, Dallas. I mean, you're talking about three teams with 91 points going into tonight. Nashville's right behind them with 82. But that's quite a battle out there. It's going to be a lot of fun.
It is. I really like the West, and I like these teams. I like Winnipeg. I'm a big Rick Bonus fan. I hope he's back behind the bench here. As they say, he had a minor surgical procedure, should be back in a couple of games, and hopefully he is. Colorado, obviously, just 2 years from winning the Stanley Cup, and they made so many moves. I've yet to sort out what their lineup really looks like with what they did at the deadline. Dallas surprises me, but you look at the numbers across the board, they're at the top of the league in a lot of important categories, and they're right there in that race in the Central Pacific. I'm a big, big Rick Tocchet fan. I loved him when he was here. He was great with the media, and he faced obviously some difficult circumstances when he had to take over for Barry Melrose as the head coach of the team. Obviously finding success with Vancouver, Edmonton. I really enjoy watching that. I'm glad for Connor McDavid, the best player in the league, deserves to have a successful team around him, and it looks like that's finally happened. L.A.'s a surprise to me, but here's Nashville, as you pointed out, and they're the hottest team in hockey right now, and Vegas trying to hold off Minnesota. I think they'll do that as they start to get a little healthier. So they got Jack Eichel back and putting their lineup back together. They just haven't had the same fire this year, and I've seen a couple of games where Bruce Cassidy is very exasperated with what has happened to his team at various, they come out, they might play great for a period and then are horrible for a period. They're up and they're down, a little bit like the Lightning, but I think when you're coming off a Stanley Cup win and not, suffering the lineup subtractions that the Lightning have had for 3 or 4 years, the expectations are that you're going to be a little more solid than they have. So it's a very interesting race out west. They're all big teams. They all play rugged, and they can beat you any way you want, which I think is the mix you need to win a Stanley Cup.
Roger,
let's get back to the future of your perception of the league. Do you see expansion in the near term, Rick, at all in the NHL? Or are they going to just keep it where it is and keep it getting stronger like it has been in recent years?
Well, I think the first thing is they've got to settle the Arizona situation. And apparently the ownership there has, they've got plans in a new area around the Scottsdale area that they're going to try to build a rink. And how that comes out, how it's received by the public, and whether that can become a reality, they have to decide if they're going to keep that team there, or, as I've read in a couple of spots, maybe they, move it to Utah. The owner of the Utah Jazz is really pushing hard for inclusion in the National Hockey League. He wants a team there in Salt Lake, and maybe that's where the Coyotes would move, or maybe they would move to Houston, where the owner there has the Rockets has said he wants to get into the NHL business. So they've got to settle the Coyotes, and once they do that, then I think they can set their sights on what they want to do in a timeline where you want to add two more teams. Because I think it's got to be done with one team in the East, one team in the West, and that might give Atlanta an edge, because I don't think there's another market realistically in the East that could say that, they're ready to house a National Hockey League team. I think Quebec City's come and gone. And, in the West, you've got Houston, and you've also got Utah vying for teams. So I think Arizona is the key in how that all turns out.
Rick Pekemar, guest, Hall of Famer, and certainly been with the Lightning and knows the National Hockey League forward and backward. How about some of the observations about the broadcasting? I think they've gotten a great deal more exposure with all the different channels that are now picking up the National Hockey League. And Royce also talked about They've gotten a lot more on ESPN, which they didn't get very much because they didn't have any really strong affiliation with ESPN. You've been in the broadcasting business a long time. Some of your observations on how the broadcasts are going.
I think they're going great. I think when you look back at the last time ESPN was doing National Hockey League games, it was a pretty good setup as far as the NHL was concerned because you had the Stanley Cup Finals were on ABC, of course, part of that same company with Disney, and ESPN carried the games. You had ESPN2 with their nightly programs, which I think were very important to the NHL at that stage. And then, of course, the contract went away for a long time. Now it's back. I think the NHL is doing a very good job with that. I think that what the deal really lacked previously, and they have now, is a second network, right? You've got TNT involved. So you need two networks. Like, the NBA has really made that work, and the NHL needed to do the same thing. And I think now with TNT on board and some quality broadcasters there, that they've got a real good product on national TV.
Roger, you wind up this segment. We've got Trevor ready to go.
Okay, well, I'll tell you, Rick, I totally agree with you on that. And I think Turner is to be congratulated because I think the team that they have, including Anson Carter, they do a fantastic job. And that's, in my opinion, one of the best pregame, intermission teams that in all of sports. They just do a great job. The personalities work well together, and I love watching the NFL or the NHL on TNT.
Yeah, they've incorporated social media to where Bissonnette's on there, and he's really had a persona on social media before he became a nationwide broadcaster. So I think it brings that audience too. They want the younger audience, and I think it really appeals to them. I think the whole thing is working out very well for the NHL right now.
Rick, thank you so much for your time. We'll get you as we get closer to the playoffs. We look forward to having you on with us again, and you can sort of evaluate some of the different games and some of the thoughts and some of the momentum as we go along. You've seen it all. So thank you very much for your time tonight.
Oh, you're welcome, and certainly look forward to being back with you gentlemen soon.
Oh, great. Always a pleasure and an honor to be able to talk to you, Rick. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Hall of Famer. You can't do any better than that. Okay, Trevor Bosco is ready to go with us. And, Trevor, every time we go to you, somebody's talking in the background. The last 30 seconds of the last interview, we could hear all the noise in the background. So whatever it is, get that shut off, and we'll get started and give everybody an opportunity because we're getting closer and closer to the opening kickoff for the USFL. And, Trevor, give us an idea of where we stand right now.
Yeah, that was not me. Just want to clarify, my phone is on mute. The kickoff for the USFL is on March 30th. We are counting down 10 days away. A lot of exciting news. The big revelation in the past week has been defensive coordinator Greg Williams discussing the potential for expansion, and that's obviously going to be leading, hopefully leading to having this season kick off with a big flair in a sense. And that's going to, expansion in terms of the next couple seasons, which Greg Williams was talking about on the UFL podcast. He was hoping to get 12 teams by season two and 16 teams by season three, a lot sooner than what I expect. But if they do expect to have this first season, the inaugural season of the UFL, go as they plan, I'm expecting them to, expect at least, I would hope, 1.5 million viewers per regular season game. And then hopefully, in the postseason to the championship game, maybe in the upward echelon of 3 to maybe 4 million per postseason game. And if they can hit a 5 million viewer mark on the championship game, I can definitely see an expansion come within that time frame, within that 2 to 3 year mark. But I just thought that was a big headline that I saw that, was worth talking about. And if anyone out there wants to listen to some, you know, overall extensive USL content, make sure you check out the podcast at Tee Time Reports on all platforms, 2 episodes every week. But the big revelation was, you know, an actual coordinator that's coaching right now. He coached for the DC Defenders last year as well in the XFL. But, you know, hearing that out of a coach's, you know, mouth is huge news. You know, their expectations are clearly high, and I think the fans are right there with, you know, everyone in the building there.
Roger?
Greg Williams is the former defensive coordinator of many teams in the NFL, I believe. Is that right, Trevor?
Yeah, he is definitely has a very seasoned resume, has been around. I don't remember what his last gig was, but I think he actually had a stint with the St. Louis Rams with Jeff Fisher in the 2010s. But definitely a guy that, you know, you could trust to develop these springtime players. And that's what you want. You want high-quality coaching. I preach it through and through. We know how important coaching is in the NFL, but in the UFL and even in the USFL the past two seasons and in the XFL last year, you know, the better teams clearly had the best coaches. Not guys with the most accolades, but you can just get the energy, the vibe of the team, and the sample size in these leagues is going to be about 2 weeks into the season. You're going to know what team is what and where they'll kind of lay in the power standings and the power rankings. And I will say another big pickup for the Stallions, a former first-round draft pick from the Dallas Cowboys, Taco Charlton, off the edge. I mean, that's their defense, the Birmingham Stallions defense, it's going to be so dominant. I don't know what else to say about it, but they also did let go of a all-USFL cornerback, Channing Stribling, from the 2022 season. He was in the Philadelphia Stars, but they let him go in the first round of cuts a couple weeks back. The St. Louis Battlehawks wound up picking him up to shore up that defensive end, the defensive back end on their, you know, defensive unit with Davon Askew-Henry. That's also a team I think is going to show out pretty nicely, you know, mainly because I think the UFL is betting on, you know, that team to succeed because of the crowd that it pulls and overall social media presence. But that's another team that's, you know, impressed me this offseason with bringing in talent. That's the team with AJ McCarron on it, if anyone, you know, needs some clarification. But they have a good coach with Anthony Beck. They did miss the playoffs last year in the XFL season, and they did go 7-3. So definitely a team that needs to learn how to execute in those big games, especially at the tail end of the regular season, because that's when, you know, it really matters most, especially if you're in the, you know, the postseason hunt. But I think the big names and the big teams are probably going to be coming from the Stallions, the Birmingham Stallions out of the USFL Conference, and then the St. Louis Battlehawks out of the XFL Conference, which, you know, if you look on DraftKings, they're the two top favored to win it all. So definitely teams you could probably bet on if you're a betting man, but if you're also just a fan and looking for good football and quality, you know, coaching, those are two teams I would definitely recommend.
Trevor, we talked a great deal last week about the kickoff game and punting game, the kicking game overall, and I saw today that the National Football League has now got proposals on the table about changing the kicking game in the National Football League. Maybe you know more about that than we do. What's on the table?
Well, I did see that as well. That's been, you know, talked about, obviously, this past off season more frequently than I remember, at least. But they are going to be presenting the idea of using what they've been doing in the USFL and XFL, bringing the ball out and encouraging returns, you know, encouraging actual kickoff returns instead of touchbacks, which I like. But, you know, it's also one of those things where, you know, big committees and, you know, maybe spokespersons for unions and the players, they might be against it, mainly for the pure fact alone of injury concern. On special teams, you don't want some of your star guys going out there and getting hurt when they don't necessarily need to. It's mainly a rule that I think is, you know, going to satisfy, you know, TV production value, as well as just getting explosive plays, you know, back into the game on special teams. But I will say in the USFL, it did work for the past two seasons, and they did adopt the same rules in the UFL. So, you know, if there's a trial and error run that the NFL could do, it's definitely, you know, in springtime. So I imagine they'll see how it goes in this UFL season. If it's something they like, maybe they'll, you know, accept it. But I don't really see it changing in the NFL. It might, but we'll have to see down the line. I think that's a conversation that might, you know, take place, you know, towards the season, towards the beginning of the season, in the training camp, in a sense.
Well, you're exactly right about the injuries. That's the reason they changed it in the first place, that, you know, you can make a fair catch or let the ball go or whatever you decide to do and not have kickoff returns, although kickoff returns have been for years the most exciting part or one of the most exciting parts of the game. So I think that's what they're trying to reincorporate into the game, the fact that they want to, in some cases, make the team feel the ball and run it back. Because it is a very, very exciting part of the game. Roger?
It's all excitement, Don. And by the way, Trevor, I know your grandfather is very happy at this point in the St. Joe's Seton Hall game. St. Joe's is up 42-37 early in the second half. So the Hawk will never die. You know, you've heard that, I'm sure, from your grandfather many times. But
So
how about some of the surprise players? Have there been many? We talked about in baseball. I was surprised that the Phillies sent back to the minor league complex a couple of players. But you know, you're on top of this. Any surprises in the league? It looks like there's going to, you know, be their final roster.
Actually, there's been a couple guys we, you know, sadly did lose to the CFL, just mainly because there's not enough roster spots. And, you know, that was my biggest fear with hearing about only the fact that there's only eight teams. Really good players that genuinely do deserve to be on rosters are just not going to be. A guy that did go into the CFL, his name's Cam Echols-Looper, played two seasons with the New Jersey Generals under Mike Riley, a phenomenal special teams guy, a really elusive wide receiver as well. Just no spot for him. He was an all USFL player, had to go to CFL just to keep the game going, keep his dream alive. And, you know, another guy I could shout out is Paris Ford, a safety, 2 years on the New Jersey Generals as well. Phenomenal lockdown nickel corner, splash safety, a really versatile player, and just not, you know, a spot for him. And, you know, like I said earlier, Channing Stribling was fortunate enough to get picked up by the St. Louis Battlehawks, a defensive back needy team. It's just unfortunate that they didn't come in with a 12-team league off rip just to give more opportunities to players. But my first, you know, thought when it goes to that is, you know, we need to expect them to, like, take it slow so that they can, you know, structurally get this thing intact and ready, you know, for the future. But one thing that they should shore up before they expand is player pay. It definitely needs to be increased, in my personal opinion, with the amount of money that, you know, people bet on this league, and they did on the XFL and USFL last year. These players deserve a cut, especially in merchandising. There needs to be some more, you know, merchandise for the players, more incentive for the players, a draw to the league for a future for yourself as a person as well off the field. But that's a conversation for down the line, I'm sure. But guys to look out for in terms of surprise players, no doubt in my mind, there's a guy that, you know, speaks to me that doesn't get enough acknowledgement, but his name is TJ Tyler. He's on the Houston Roughnecks. He's a linebacker. Look out for him. Look out for, obviously, Offensive Player of the Year from 2023 in the USFL, running back Mark Thompson on the Houston Roughnecks. He's been phenomenal for the past 2 years on that team. And look out for Case Cookus and the Memphis Showboats. Look out for wide receiver Vinny Papale, obviously. Just a little announcement as well. I'm going to be speaking to him on the show next week, so that's pretty awesome.
Great. That's fantastic.
Yeah. No, it's pretty awesome, and I can't wait to ask him about, you know, what his expectations are and, you know, the Memphis Showboats culture as a general and what John DeLafippio is doing with that coaching staff. But there's a lot. I mean, and we can't sleep on the fact that A.J. McCarron set springtime records, single-game records last year with throwing over 420 passing yards in single games. I mean, he was going nuts. They just didn't win in crunch time. There's a lot of players and a lot of really good playmakers in this league and a lot of guys that will get the spotlight. And, you know, there will be a little bit of a shift in the offseason. There's going to be some guys picked up. This will be a poaching type of league for the NFL. But if there's some guys that know their limits and, you know, want to make a future and a legacy in football, this is the league for them to do it in. They are building this for the future. And, you know, I think as of right now, they're doing it the way they should. It may not be the best way in everyone's eyes, but it's doing – they're doing it in a way that's feasible financially, and they're going to put a good product in the field just based on what I saw from the USFL last year, just knowing Daryl Johnston's still in the building, still making those decisions, and still has his hands on the production value of things. And I trust Fox, not as much as I do with ESPN with football, but knowing that there was an announcement that came out actually this week, they are going to have a USL panel, a whole talk show on ESPN after every game. So that's good that they're getting, you know, that kind of funding and, you know, that kind of production value for the league. We need more coverage. There needs to be segments on this. There wasn't any on the XFL or USFL the past 2-3 years. There needs to be diverted time and, you know, analysts of this league and people dedicated to covering this league because it deserves that. And I think that, you know, we'll see that, you know, this league will take a little bit of a step up from, you know, the XFL and USFL. I'm glad that, you know, we're going to be able to get this kind of production and this kind of quality of competition. Like I said, there's a lot of really good players, a lot of really good guys that don't have roster spots for a reason, because there's already really good players getting called back down from the NFL, former first round, second round, third round draft picks. I mean, quarterback Matt Corral, Ole Miss phenom. You know, he wasn't the same after that injury at Baylor, but the fact that he came to Birmingham and is trusting Skip Holtz to revive his career, that's saying something about not only the coaches, but, you know, the trust in this league. And hopefully the narrative around springtime football will change after this USL season.
Trevor, we talked about this a lot last week, and I made a point of, I look at a number of different papers week in and week out, and I also go through the computer as much as I can. And as you say, there's been a little bit of noise on the computer. You can pick up something on the USFL. But for the most part, the newspapers just aren't giving a lot of coverage right now. Now, I understand most of the teams are in the South. They're not up in the Northeast where, you know, you're going to get the newspapers covering them front line. But on your show, you get an opportunity to see and hear and talk to more people directly, and I would assume that you're going to have to find that there's going to be a lot more coverage somewhere pretty soon as the league gets underway.
Absolutely. I think that there's also local TV and news stations giving their, you know, due diligence and their marketing, you know, to the local teams in Michigan. They've been doing a lot of marketing on news stations and stuff, you know, announcing that.
But not in the Northeast, though.
There is D.C. And then Michigan, but you're right, there's not many teams spread out through the entire United States. And again, it's mainly to probably conserve, you know, the finances and the funding. But, no, I agree with you. There's not many huge, huge, like, nationally covered markets in the league that might present a problem. But I think that the fact that Fox and ESPN, when it comes to crunch time, you know, if they want to make a buck on this thing, they're going to have to push, you know, a lot of marketing and a lot of, you know, advertisement and get this thing hyped. And I've been seeing that on, you know, Twitter/X, on, you know, social media. They've been doing a really good job with their posting and stuff like that. But I have also seen a bunch of other smaller accounts start taking, you know, pride in producing content on the league themselves, getting information themselves, going to the live practices, the live scrimmages, and actually covering the teams and the rosters fairly well. And I think that the news and the word will get out, and, you know, maybe not until, you know, that first upcoming week, but I, you know, we're coming down to it here. And I'll say this, the social media presence has been insane when it comes to the account growths for all the teams.
Right.
And you know, and that's a good sign. It's showing that the fans are going to be there, that there's at least support. And I'll say this about the USFL, the past two seasons, they did a lot of community work in their local areas, for Memphis, for Birmingham, even Michigan, in Detroit, around Ford Field. And you know, getting in touch with the communities is very important. And I think that they've done that, bringing in a face of the league like Dwayne The Rock Johnson, having the Under Armour sponsorship. These are big things that are going to boost and propel this league to
get exposed to more and more people, and I think that that's a big thing, and I'm excited to see it. And I think it already is getting there because combining forces, you know, may not be, you know, everyone's favorite idea from the XFL and USFL, but I think it was the right move for springtime football to be actually, you know, professional and able to survive. And I think that, you know, the noise will turn up. And I think especially on kickoff when two former championship teams play, the numbers that come out on Monday, the preliminary numbers that come out Monday for all the ratings and the viewership, and then when we get the final numbers on Wednesday, you know, that Wednesday after, I think we'll be surprised. I think we'll be positively surprised.
Trevor, thank you very, very much. Once again, we'll catch up next weekend, and we'll only be, let's see, it's 10 days now, so we'll only be 3 days away from the beginning of the season. And I know there's going to be a lot more publicity nationally than there has been, and we'll see a lot more about the USFL. Thank you very, very much.
Take care, Trevor.
Thank
Have
you, guys.
A great week.
Take care. You as well. Thank you, guys.
Mike Simzak's down there in the Baltimore, Washington area, ready to go, and we're going to start off with soccer tonight because, Mike, there's so many things we've talked about during the course of the program tonight, but we're going to start with soccer because the Champions Tour is stopping in New York City, which is a big, big story. And so maybe you touch first of all on that because you got some great, great teams that are going to be playing, and they're going to be playing in the two best venues in the New York area.
Okay. Now, number one thing, first thing I have to tell you is, I learned something today. Don't rock an afro on a windy day. That is not a good thing. Moving on from
there. Say that again. I didn't hear what you said.
I said, don't have an afro on a windy day.
He doesn't get it, Mike.
My hair is long. And
I can't even understand
here.
Him.
Yeah. I got it, Mike.
You have to have hair to understand it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I don't have it either.
Yeah. Roger, I had long hair, and I swear the wind caught me, and it almost blew me sideways. So don't have an afro on a windy day. It is not good.
Roger, you're going to have to carry this. You're going to have to carry this. I can't understand anything he's saying. So you pick it up from here. Go ahead.
He was being funny, Don. And that's what Frank just said. You have to have hair to understand what Mike was saying. Let's move on to soccer. Okay.
The Champions Series is coming up. I know Manchester City is coming over. These are the announcements of all the preseason tournaments. They're very, very, very worth it to go and see if that's what you're in. But, again, you're looking at European teams that are coming in on preseason training. Manchester City, the defending English Premier League champs, the treble winners, European champs, they're coming over this summer. They just announced full slate. Arsenal is coming over, so we're starting to get, Don and Roger, the list of European teams that will be here this summer and where they're going to play. I've been out to a number of those games, and they are a lot of fun to go to.
Well, what Don was saying, Don, are you there? I want to be.
This is nothing compared to what I asked him about. Go ahead.
Well, no, Don was asking
about
series,
and that was what I was talking about.
Yeah,
talking about Manchester City. I'm talking about Chelsea. I'm talking about the Champions Tour that's going to New York City. They're going to play Yankee Stadium, and they're going to Barcelona, MetLife. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, those are the preseason tournaments for the European teams that are coming over, and that's what they're announcing right now. They are a lot of fun to go to. Again, you're starting to see the European teams because they call it the Champions Series, but what it is it's actually a series of preseason friendlies that the European teams play over here in the United States before the European season starts.
So they're there to get a workout, so to speak.
Yeah, that's what it really is.
Yeah, and they're playing at Yankee Stadium and at the Meadowlands.
Of course, because those are two of the biggest, the most well-known venues in the United States.
How much are you going to charge for these games that are only going to be practice?
These are preseason games. They call it the Champions Series. They always give it, they change the name every couple of years, but it still is a series of preseason friendlies that your big European teams play over here in the United States, because A, it's a great draw for revenue, and B, it's the best sort of preseason training that they can get before they go into their season. But Don, I'm not going to lie to you. It looks good. It's like they call it the Champions Series, but it really is just a series of preseason friendlies.
Yeah, it's a marketing ploy.
Yeah. And it's worth it because they're going to get a lot of money. Based on the series that they announced, I'm interested. So it is, but that's just – they're preseason games. I don't know what else to tell you.
That's it. Yeah.
That's the end of that story.
So – Well, the MLS, as we know, they've gotten started. I just saw the United game the other night was on, and it looked pretty good, Mike. You know, from what I saw in that game, and that's only the beginning of the season. They look good.
Well, Atlanta United's gotten off to a really solid start, Roger. The big issue with them last year was they couldn't stop people from scoring, and that's what they've been able to do. So they're off to a good start. They're looking really, really good. As for the Philadelphia Union, who we also talk about a lot, three games played, three draws. I would not like to be sitting at 3 points after three games. Eventually, they're going to have to figure out how to win. And when we talked last week on Wednesday, they were coming off of a 6-0 defeat down in Pachuca. And I could understand how they could lose 6-0 down in Pachuca. What I can't understand is how they can surrender a lead and only draw with Austin FC. They're out of the CONCACAF Champions League now. You know, they only have a league to focus on. So Jim Curtin is going to have to start getting them into wins. I said before the season started, this was a team that didn't really make any signings over the summer. They kind of pulled the Dallas Cowboys. We're going to run it back. We're going to use what we have. And it's going to be very interesting to see. If they continue to play like they are playing right now, they're going to have to struggle to get in the playoffs. And that may cost Curtin his job. He's going to need to get this team, which he said, hey, I can go out there and I can compete for trophies. Right now, they're not looking like that. He's going to need to get them to be able to do that.
Mike, last week we talked about Washington and, you know, we talked about the outstanding player in the league and has been for so many years and not being close to the playoffs, but they're right there with the Flyers right now. And give us some of your thoughts on how Washington is playing at the moment. And do you think they've got it in them to make a real run now, the last 15 games or so?
I think that they have it in them to make a run. The first half of the season, Alexander Ovechkin he's up into the 20s right now, so he's scoring again. It also helps that the Detroit Red Wings have just completely fallen off a cliff. So they've left them with the opportunity to get into the playoffs. They now have multiple opportunities to get into the playoffs. You know, I love the Flyers to death. I really, really do. But that wasn't a team that we thought might be a playoff team at the beginning of the season. And that's who the Caps are competing with for a spot in the Metropolitan. They've gotten avenue through the wild card. I think there's a better than average shot that they could get there. And if they do, they could be a really, really, really entertaining team. Connor McMichael is a very entertaining player. Alexander Ovechkin is still doing what Alexander Ovechkin does. Spencer Carberry is a phenomenal hockey coach. He has a long future in front of him in the NHL, be it with the Washington Capitals or with anybody else. I mean, this guy is really, really good. Pay attention to the name, because I'm promising you, before his career as a coach is done, he's going to have multiple Stanley Cups.
Roger?
Well, that guy really impresses you, if you can make that statement. Is he a real young guy, Mike? I'm not familiar with him.
He's an absolutely young guy. He's in his early 40s. He was a lower league coach. He had left. He was with the Capitals organization for a couple of years. He left. He came back. He coached the Hershey Bears. This guy may be one of the best young coaches in the NHL right now. And I promise you both gentlemen, his name's going to come up again. He's just really, really good at being able to cultivate young guys, but he's also proven this year with Backstrom and Ovechkin and Tom Wilson that he can also manage veterans. I think he has a bright future ahead of him. If nothing else comes out of the season, the Capitals have found a really good head coach, and the only question is whether or not they can hang on to him.
Well, they're catching a real break now, because the Islanders are right behind them. Their goaltending has been really shaky, and right now the coach at the Islanders is saying, you know, he's very, very dissatisfied with the type of goaltending. And Roger brought this up in the second part of the show when we were talking to Beckham, and that was when if you don't have goaltending, you know, you don't have anything. So, you know, that's the situation right now. These clubs are all very, very close. And whoever comes up with the best goaltending is going to be the team that's going to have a chance to lead the way in.
And the funny thing is the Caps have some decent goaltending. We thought Darcy Kuemper would be the guy that would lead the Caps, but Charlie Lindgren, who is ostensibly their backup, has probably been the better keeper. Doesn't ride the hot hand. I think that the Caps get into the playoffs. Either they can get past the New York Islanders or they can get past the Detroit Red Wings. I still think the Flyers actually make it too. So we'll see how that lines up with those two wild card spots. But I think you see both the Caps and the Flyers in the NHL playoffs.
Roger?
Yeah, I think you're right about that, Mike. And I'll tell you, a lot of people that I hear on the radio and a couple of my friends that are, you know, big Flyer fans, they all feel that, and one of them, Don and I, Frank, know very well, TL, Tom LeMain, and he's at every game, and he feels they're going to make it into the playoffs. So, you know, that's an accomplishment in the first year of the management of Keith Jones and Danny Briere. You know, Rick Peckman was talking about that earlier in the last segment. I did want to talk about there's a lot of, from what I hear, a lot of good sounds coming out about the Nationals. You know, that they will be much better than they have been in recent years. They do have a young team, and they've got a lot of, I think, up-and-coming, really great ball players. What's the feeling in the D.C. market about that?
All right, right before we get into that, I want to give the Flyers credit. Wayne Simmons is signed a one-day contract to retire as a Flyer.
To retire. Yeah.
A great servant to the club. Just an amazing, everything good representative. And I really want to just bring that up. As for the Nationals, Roger, they got to be better than last season because it's hard to be worse.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good team. I still – they were about a 100-loss team last year. Significant improvement would be 90 losses this year. I don't see them being a team that's really around 500. So you're looking in between 85 and 95 losses. I still do think they have some young talent that could be good. J.J. Abrams is really good. Mackenzie Gore, if he can find his James Woods, who was a guy that I talked to you about last week, he's the big one that we need to see. He was the major piece of the Max Scherzer trade that they wanted, the Juan Soto trade that they wanted to get. That was the guy. So we're hoping that we can start to see them put a core of young players together that we know will be together for the next, 4 to 6 years. I still don't think that they're going to be over 500, and I would be really surprised if they're a team that loses less than 90 games. But if you're saying they should be significantly improved because they go from a 100 loss team to a 90 loss team, yeah, I'll buy that.
You talked about Strasburg last week, and that they invited him down to camp, and you were not overwhelmed with his public relations attitude toward things about helping some of the younger players out. Has there been any comment about how Strasburg has done since he's in camp?
Yeah, nothing's changed. I still would be very – he's not going to show up. He's not going to be a guy who goes in and hangs out at the club in the clubhouse and is in the locker room, especially when he can't pitch. That's just not who Stephen Strasburg is. If you're expecting him to be a guy who goes in and mentors young players and teaches Mackenzie Gore the finer points of the curveball, then you're sorely mistaken. That's just not how Strasburg has ever operated. There is a lot of tension in between Stephen Strasburg in the front office over his contract and retirement and things like that. He was supposed to retire last year. They said that they were going to give him Stephen Strasburg days. My guess is that they tried to buy him out and the number wasn't right. And he said, no, I'm not going to do this. And to his credit, they signed him to a guaranteed contract. He is owed all the money that it is not his fault that he has, from injury, only pitched, 80 innings in the last 4 years. They owe him that money. They're the ones that have to solve that problem. It's not on him to say, I'm going to forfeit all of this. So all the time where they're saying, I want you to do this because you're under contract, it's incumbent on the Washington Nationals to make it so that he does that. And if they want to buy him out, figure out the price, negotiate with the man. You promise him this contract, you sign him to this contract, you're obligated to it.
Right.
Yeah, they didn't have to sign it. But, I'll tell you, Don, what I think about back when he came into the league, into the Major League Baseball, they said he's going to be a Hall of Famer. And I remember you and I saying, hey, that's a little premature. Because just because you have one good season doesn't mean you're going to have 20 good seasons or 5 good seasons. and he never has been able to be injury-free to do what they expected.
And that's the big thing, Roger. Like, does he have the capability with his velocity and his pitches to be a Hall of Famer? Absolutely. If he could have stayed healthy, he could have been a different version of Justin Verlander.
Oh, no doubt about it.
He could never be healthy. He was never healthy long enough. And I give him credit. He stayed healthy long enough at the exact right point, won the World Series MVP, pitched
right
two lights-out games and a relief appearance in that, and they gave him a boatload of money to hang on to him. But at the same time...
Well, I think you're saying right now, I think you're saying right now a change in philosophy. You're not saying, you know, these general managers and owners are not giving out those kind of contracts. And I think Strasburg's a perfect example of what happened. Boris just snowballed, you know, him into the situation in Washington, and they had won a world championship, and they decided to, you know, go back to the old system and give him a long-term contract for a lot of money when everybody knew he was so injury-prone. When he was in college, he was injury-prone.
Yeah, and it was – they turned down Anthony Rizzo, which might not be necessarily a bad thing, but they said, we're going to give him a long-term contract. And they knew what his injury history was. I can't say anything other than the Nationals got exactly what they paid for.
Roger?
Yeah, they didn't expect it, but that's what they got. Okay, that's mm-hmm. the bottom line. By the way, Seton Hall's up 58 to 54, 7:56 remaining in the first. And coming up after this game, Villanova VCU. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm sure you are too, Don. That should be a decent game. And, you know, when I look at Seton Hall, it just
yeah.
seems like yesterday.
Glad to see St. Joe make it a good showing tonight as well.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you know, the Big Five was out of the NCAA tournament this year for the first time with no participant. So it's good to see it in the NIT. But
okay,
yeah,
Doug's all set to go. And so first of all, let me say thank you very much to Mike. And Mike, we got off to a shaky start. Is there any more VO left down in Washington?
Huh?
Is there any VO left in Washington?
Hey,
before you go,
we'll catch up with you next week. Thank you very much, as always.
Take care, Mike. Have a great week.
Doug Hamilton's on the line right now, and I'll tell you what a great player championship last weekend. And Scotty wins another one. And you know, I looked at the paper on Monday, and it wasn't in there, but I know it's a $4 million purse for the winner. But I didn't see what the breakdown was for finishing second, third, or fourth. Maybe, Doug, maybe you saw some of the breakdowns on the money. I did not.
I didn't do the autopsy on the tournament. I know that he was 20 under par. And, you know, like I was – when Frank patched me in, we were talking. And I'm just really, really trying awfully hard to, you know, continue moving on – you know, my teaching operation here and really focused on, you know, just acquiring new guests and clientele and doing an awful lot of different things to try to do that. I feel like
other priorities, Doug, priorities.
I'm really trying to use my time wisely to not only educate myself, but try to, you know, figure out a way that I can, you know, acquire more and more lessons. I've expanded into, you know, a little bit from the Montgomery County market where I teach. I've gone into my own home backyard here in Frederick to try to, you know, that was the indoor teaching concept that was omnipresent during the winter. And then most of those folks.
Well, Doug, let me interrupt for just a second to tell everybody this. Yeah, Doug's a PGA professional. He's been on with us for years, and most people that listen to the show on a regular basis realize that because we talk about golf a lot, and he gives golf tips and other things, but in making the transition into a new business, and which hopefully is very, very successful. But now to finish up with what you're saying, I just want people to know what we're talking about.
Okay. Yeah, not a problem. Yeah, it's a spiel, Don, that I typically give people, from, classes or lessons or those sorts of things, and they oftentimes want to know, like, what are your credentials or who are you, where did you come from, those sorts of things. And you guys know that, I guess I've been on the show for, I don't even know what it's been now, 10 years probably, and the previous 18 years of my life I've spent operationally in country clubs running, all the aspects you can run of a golf operation, from, PGA professional, director of golf, head golf professional. Back in my early days, I was an assistant, and now I've transitioned into full-time teaching, which has been, it's tough the first year you start something new like that, but we're building, I think, pretty quickly, and, it's been fun. I've spent an awful lot of time with family. I'm actually getting to, be a parent and see my son play different sporting events. We relish the fact that we get the opportunity when we can to have, sit-down dinners that we can all, enjoy. And that work-life balance, I think, is a topic not just present in golf, but I think it's across the board in many corporations and places that you would have those type of discussions. So it's been great, and I'm looking forward to it. I know that Frank had told me that we have about 60-plus thousand listeners that occupy the state of Maryland. You can find me at www.mcggolf.com. Doug Hamilton is who you're looking for. I teach at four different places, three different in Montgomery County. And then X Golf Frederick is the other place that you can find me. If you look at the PGA coach, you'll be able to search me as a coach.
Oh, that gives it all. That's good. You got you covered. And listen, the golf season's coming up. In the north, I mean, it's already down here, even though we still have some brown grass. I know the country club by me, I go by all the time, and I see golfers out there. I mean, of course, down here, you can see them in the middle of December or maybe Christmas Eve, maybe not Christmas Day. But, it's definitely, there's been some warm days up there. A friend of mine told me the other day it was the same as here, like 75, I think.
Yeah. Well, the temperature's oscillated. I mean, we've had, some abnormal warm spring days that have been wonderful. Almost broke out the shorts the other day, but then I was quickly reminded that old man winter's not ready to take a nap quite yet. And we've hit, mid-40s, and we've had, some gusty wind type of days and less than desirable from a being outside standpoint. But, it's March in Maryland. That's kind of what you get. I mean, we've had snow here into April before. So, I mean, I'm not convinced that, we're going to sustain a fairly consistent pattern here until it presents itself, which we don't know when that's going to be. But I was telling Frank, I mean, my bookings are pretty strong from, probably the latter half of March into the beginning portion of April. And I think people are starting to get the bug and want to move about and get outside. And as you said, Roger, I mean, there's no matter what day I go to the golf course to teach, there's going to be people there playing golf. It just, they're there, they're playing. And, the post-COVID boom for golf has not relented, so it's still there.
Doug, the one thing that you've emphasized during the number of years that you've been on with us, and that is preparation, preparation, preparation. Yeah. And when you've not spent maybe a lot of time in the gym in the off season, you don't just go out and start swinging like it's 4th of July.
Sure. Right. Well, I mean, there was a day, Don, I think that we can all revere that we could kind of walk from the parking lot to the first tee and do a couple of arm circles and maybe chug a beer and go ahead and hit driver as far as we wanted to. But, those days are gone for me. But, yeah, I do my due diligence, not just in the winter, but on an everyday, basis with regard to my fitness and trying to add or subtract different things. A new component that I've test-cased an individual recently on is there's a a program called the TPI, which is the Titleist Performance Institute, and I have a student that came to me that brought forth their goals and their aspirations of what they want to do this season, and I've kind of made a partner with one of the local gyms that I go to, and this guy is TPI certified, so I sent this individual to him to get screened. It's a battery of different tests that they go through body-wise for stability, mobility, and different things, and then he gives me that feedback because it's going to help me teach that individual better because now I know what their deficiencies from their body are. So if I've asked them to, you know, make a longer shoulder turn or a more full weight transfer to the right side or whatever, maybe they don't have the capacity to do that based on a sustained injury or some other, you know, deficiency that they may have that won't allow them to do that. So it's an area that I'm trying to create that kind of is a team concept that someone comes to me and says, you know, look, I want to do these things and I want to make sure that I can, you know, feasibly teach them to do those things. So it's been pretty cool so far. Roger?
You know, Doug, I'll tell you, I was out doing the PA at varsity and then at JV and then a freshman game Saturday and Monday and last night. And I got to tell you, it can be even 60 degrees or 55 degrees as it was. But when you get that a heavy wind, boy, I'll tell you, that is just penetrating. And I know it's like that out on the golf course, and that wind can just change your golf game totally.
Well, I cheated the other day. I gave about an 8-hole playing lesson to an individual, and I stole the cart that was in the cart barn that had the wind cover on it, and it was a much nicer ride to avoid some of those. And some of those situations, if you play a hillier style course, you hope you're down in the low spots when she's really windy so that it breaks it up a little bit. But, you know, look, we've talked about different golf tips over the course of time, and I think that, as Don would say, that preparation, I mean, no matter – you know, what it is that you're doing, I think you should probably have an idea of, you know, multiple kind of light type base layers that you can wear. I think the ski cap is an essential. You know, there's other pieces. I mean, hell, you can get heated vests that you can put on that I think are great. You can get, you know, wind sweaters, which I have, which have a windproof lining on the inside, merino wool sweater on the outside. And if you layer properly underneath that, you can still adequately make shoulder turns and swings, yet you'll still be, you know, warm enough to continue play. And once you get moving, I mean, I think if you have the ability to do so, you've got different types of push carts. People like to carry their golf bags, but if you can keep your blood moving, I think you're off to a good start there in terms of staying warmer.
Doug, I know you're a Titleist guy. You know, this time of the season, we normally talk about that as well, the golf balls, as well as the equipment, new equipment coming out. What do you see on the horizon coming to this spring?
Yeah, I mean, I think Titleist as many – well, I've been in the Titleist family for I think it's probably been 20 years now, and most of their life cycles of irons, hybrids, woods, driver, et cetera, golf balls, they're all on about a two-year cycle. I know I'm anxiously awaiting my brand-new wedges that my sales rep was kind enough to gift to me that should hopefully be here soon. The SM10 spin milled version 10 by Vokey is the latest. Typically the golf balls change about every 2 years where they, you know, may rework the dimples or the cover or the core or those different things to achieve a greater status. And of course that's going to change as we move forward. You know, with the bifurcation of the rules of golf that indicate we're going to roll that sucker back so that we're going to lose, you know, yardage mostly at the tour level, but then on down to the amateur level and 27, I think it is, that they were talking about it. So there's that. You know, the irons, this will be my second full season playing the irons. So I got the T100 irons, which are really solid and really good-looking clubs. I guess this August, September, they'll go through the change for driver and fairway woods. Yeah, it's about a two-year cycle, and they've always – their R&D, I think they actually listen to a lot of people when they put forth their products with regard to the optics of, the acoustics of, and obviously the playability of. So, I mean, I've always likened Titleist to be the best out there. You have other options. I know TaylorMade makes great products. Callaway makes great products. Ping, Mizuno, they're all really good. It just depends on what you're looking for. I think over the years, Titleist has – assimilated themselves with a better player style of club, and they don't really make a quote-unquote game improvement slash enhancement style that some of these other clubs would be that you know, maybe the club base has a bigger footprint to it. Maybe the driver's a little bit more forgiving and those sorts of things. But always been a Titleist guy. It's been the best combination of sales rep, company, invoicing, product, you know, all the way on down across the board.
Roger.
Doug, do you wear a golf gloves when you're driving or two or when you're putting many golfers do? Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I've unfortunately, I guess when I started playing golf younger, I always wore a glove on my left hand, and I kind of feel naked if I'm not wearing a glove. It's a weird thing when I strike a golf ball, but different styles of grips would present themselves as more or less tacky or like I have a corded grip that I like because I like to feel the abrasion. Some people don't. By the end of the season, my hands are pretty disgusting with calluses, but there's that. I do not wear a glove when I putt. The increased feel, I think, of not having it is what I'm looking for there. But you've got your all leather, your synthetic, and different blends in between that people, you know, may or may not like. I think it's about the feel, and it's about making sure that you can adequately hold on to the club and correctly feel it.
I think that's the interesting part of it because you say you take the glove off to get up on the green to start to putt it, but it's amazing to me watching the tournament last week. I don't think I've seen as many different putting stances and holding of the club as I saw last week in the Players. I mean, it's no matter where you go, somebody has a different idea of how to hold the golf club and how to putt. I guess if it works for you, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, look, at the end of the day, I mean, most of those guys side by side are hitting the golf ball, you know, within reason, yardage-wise and accuracy-wise, and where you really start to see the separation is in and around the greens, and I think that filters on all the way down to an amateur golfer. So those guys are always trying to figure out how to make more putts because I think that's the great separator slash equalizer when it comes to the determination of their actual scores. You get a guy that's a hot putter and, you know, he's striking the ball well enough, there's a real good chance he can win that tournament, you know. And, you know, they're changing putter lengths, putter heads, putter styles, you know, stances, grips. I mean, all those things in an effort to try to gain some kind of edge.
And I think the amazing thing is that they have, I mean, they're all pros, and yet one goes to another to not take a lesson, but to get ideas of what they think they may be doing incorrectly or what they might be able to do to keep the putter down level or what how they go about approaching the ball or something. It's amazing, you know, the slight difference in how much it makes.
Well, you would be amazed. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, tour players that seek out those higher level Butch Harmons and people like that. And to be honest with you, a lot of those things they do are really super basic with, you know, just address positions, making sure that they're lined up correctly, making sure they have a routine. They can create that same symbiotic relationship every time. Grip changes, as I've learned through teaching, you know, you have different players that are designed to do different things with their bodies, and they have to make sure that, you know, their takeaway started correctly or their weight shift is correct based on their style, and that's indicative of how they hold the club with their right hand. So there's a lot of things that I incorporate into my teaching as well because I've seen people come to me that have a cookie cutter style of swing that someone's taught them, yet I look at them and think, man, it doesn't fit your body, man. We need to make some changes here. So that's the interesting part about the game is that there's no one way to teach it, but it should be tailored to each individual.
Roger?
Well, that is very interesting, and not being a golfer, I'm always very interested in learning new things about the game. By the way, Doug, I know last week we mentioned, and you said it'd be a long time, or was a long time since you saw a referee in stripes. I noticed.
Hold on, boys. We're out of. Frank tells me we're out of time.
Have a great week. God
our executive director is out of time. 65-64 Seton Hall. Well, they just scored again. So it's 67-64. Nope, check that. It's now 66-65 St. Joseph's. Okay, talk to everybody next week. Thanks to our guests. Thank you very much, Doug.
Sounds good. Thank you, boys.
Have a great week, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the women police and fire services. When you're out there and you see somebody in uniform, please make sure that you let them know they're there. They really appreciate it in these hard times. These programs are dedicated to those who lost their lives in the line of duty, Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcat, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazwitz, Sergeant Thomas Banger, Patrolman Mike Hendler, San Diego Police Department. Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, Sergeant Tom Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Lieutenant George Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant James O'Connor, Philadelphia Police Department, Sergeant Chris LeBake, Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Anafo Christen, Lakeland PD, Deputy Josh Myers, Nassau County Sheriff's Department, Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department, Captain Chris Leach, Philadelphia Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Artis Hope, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department, Chief Al Hogle, Longbow P Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Deputy Mike Hargrove, Pinellas County Sheriff's Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Joe Bullock, Florida Highway Patrol, Trooper Zachary Zibben, Florida Highway Patrol, Sergeant Christopher Fitzgerald, Philadelphia Police Department, Temple University Police Department, and Sergeant Ramon Mondez, Philadelphia Police Department, Philadelphia Airport Police. My brothers and sisters, Philadelphia may be 10-7 at this point in time, and sometime we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, and the roads rise up to meet you, may the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sunshine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the palm of his hands. Good night. God bless and have a great week.
Shem alek ma yelama, shem ma hezah yelama, son ashen evorat fet hakuig again ma yelama. Spirit and with mind aflame.
1999. County Dispatch to 1999. County Dispatch to 1999. All units be advised, 1999 has responded to his last emergency. And God rest his soul. Good night, Bob. We love you and we miss you.